Hello and welcome to Swiss Info's programme for May the 6th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Julia Slater in Bern.
Le fait que l'organisation a été décapitée est une bonne nouvelle.
Swiss President and Foreign Minister Micheline Calmy-Rey welcoming some good news this week. No prizes for guessing what it was. We'll come back to the death of Osama bin Laden in a moment. We'll also be trying to find out whether there'll soon be more Eastern Europeans living and working in Switzerland, and we'll be ending up with a party.
My thoughts today go first of all to the victims of terrorism. You know that Switzerland strongly condemns all acts of terrorism. And in that sense, the fact that the organization has been decapitated is good news. But it doesn't mean that the terrorist networks have been destroyed.
That was Micheline Calmy-Rey, this year's Swiss president, summing up the general feeling about the killing of Osama bin Laden on May the 2nd. Speaking to Swissinfo.ch, the head of Switzerland's intelligence service, Markus Zeiler, put it like this.
Mr. bin Laden was the head of this organization, but it's a long time since the Al-Qaeda hardcore has been able to exercise any operational influence on the terrorist acts of the regional organizations, in North Africa or the Arabian Peninsula, for example.
The Swiss press obviously gave the event wide coverage, sometimes in quite colourful language. This was the German-language tabloid Blick.
On the same principle as the McDonald's hamburger chain, bin Laden handed out franchises to murder, with the result that autonomous Al-Qaeda cells have established themselves from Saudi Arabia to Indonesia. The bin Laden brand thus survives its creator. Islamic terror has not yet been defeated.
Another German language paper, the Tagesanzeiger, agreed that what it called his twisted ideology would live on, but played down his impact on ordinary Muslims.
His terror organization lost the hearts of most Muslims a long time ago. People in the Islamic world want change, but they don't dream of holy wars or living as people did during the time of Muhammad. They want freedom, equal opportunity, respect, and dignity.
The French language Le Temps looked at the impact on the United States, saying that after nearly 10 years, it was finally September the 12th.
America lived through those years wounded in its very essence, doubting its status as a superpower and its role in a changing world, doubts which played a large part in bringing Barack Obama to power.
New rules came into force in Switzerland on May the 1st, allowing the citizens of 8 more European Union states to work freely in the country. Swiss Info's Sophie Douay has been looking into the implications. I asked her earlier whether Switzerland is likely to be flooded by workers from Eastern Europe.
No. Well, the thing is, the people from these 8 European countries were already allowed in. It was just that there were quotas on how many people from these countries could come in. And according to the Federal Migration Office, these quotas haven't been filled. So if people aren't coming, you know, now or beforehand, why would there be a sudden rush just because they can? The other issue as well is that people from these countries, which are mostly Eastern European countries, which have benefited from their recent membership of the EU, which means that there is strong economic growth in these countries and people are finding jobs at home.
So the trade unions are not worried about this?
They're not worried about it in terms of people coming here and taking jobs, because all the economic data says that the more people that come in, the more actually that pushes the economy to grow and more jobs are created. They are worried about issues such as wage dumping or salary undercutting, depending on how you want to describe it.
What kind of jobs are we actually talking about? Because one tends to think of people coming in and doing the kind of jobs that Swiss people don't want to do.
Well, it really depends on the education level. When the first group of European Union countries were given access to the Swiss labour market, the people that came were mostly highly educated, people working in professions such as financial services, IT, where you really need a high level of skills and where obviously the Swiss market didn't have or was unable to provide those workers. The countries that are coming in now seem to be less well-educated and fill more of the service roles. And there is evidence to suggest that there's a lot of these service roles that Swiss people, you know, really don't want to be doing themselves. So perhaps they are filling a need for the economy.
then there are no problems at all that people are foreseeing with this opening of the borders?
Well, you know, there are critics, you know, strong immigration critics in Switzerland, as everyone knows, and they say that more people coming in creates an undue pressure or more pressure on rental prices and transport infrastructure. It's interesting that the Justice Minister this week came out against that and said, well, actually, it's more a question of bad planning and that people actually want more space in their apartments than they used to.
Well, just ahead of the May the 1st change, Etienne Stabel of Swiss Info's German service went to Zermatt to test the water there. What he found didn't totally tally with what Sophie heard about Eastern European economies. Zermatt is chiefly known as the resort closest to the Matterhorn, so not surprisingly draws huge numbers of tourists, so has many hotels and many hotel workers. I asked Etienne where most of these people come from at the moment.
Most of them comes from Portugal. I think it was about 80%.
And what kind of jobs are they doing?
Oh, they are doing all kind of jobs, cleaning, kitchen, as waitresses, most unskilled.
Why do they come?
There are no jobs in their home country. And I think if it's possible, they send money home because they are very poor.
So they're doing jobs that Swiss people don't really want to do?
Yes. Washing the whole day or cleaning the whole day. You will not find a lot of Swiss people. They will do such work, yeah.
And what about East Europeans? Did you find any East Europeans there?
Yes. In my hotel, the waitress who brought me the breakfast was a Lithuanian.
And did you find that she'd come for the same reason as the Portuguese?
I think so, but she was really highly educated. She speaks English, German, French and Italian.
So what brought her to Zermatt when she's got such skills that you'd have thought would be very marketable?
I think for her it was the only possibility to going to Switzerland. She waited a long time to get a permit. She said she saw this work as a stepping stone for a better job.
So with someone as highly educated as that, why hadn't she stayed behind in Lithuania? Isn't the economy in Lithuania growing and able to provide jobs for people like her?
No, absolutely not. She said there are a lot of people, they have no jobs. And
So is she expecting other friends to join her?
I think so. For the moment, there were only two or three people from Lithuania in Zermatt. But she expects that after the 1st May now, there will come a lot of other people from her country.
On May the 4th, the Foreign Ministry made the long-awaited announcement of a new head for the Swiss Humanitarian Aid Unit, or SHA. Manuel Bessler, who's currently in charge of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Pakistan, is to take over from Tony Frisch in October. Frisch had been due to retire at the end of April, but will now stay on until Bessler takes up the post. In an exclusive interview for swissinfo.ch in Islamabad, Bessler told Billy Bierling why humanitarian work is important.
If you want to summarize, humanitarian work is about saving lives. It has to be quick, it has to be well coordinated, it has to be well resourced. And there, Switzerland has not only a tradition, has also a lot of experience and expertise to offer, and is an important player in the international theatre, which I think it's quite important to maintain.
That was Manuel Bessler, the new head of the Swiss Humanitarian Aid Unit. And now, as promised, it's party time. Swiss Info's Thomas Stevens has been in Lugano in Canton Ticino, where he got into rhythm at the International Boogie Woogie Festival.
That was Sylvain Tsing, the 38-year-old self-proclaimed boogie-woogie ambassador playing honky-tonk train blues composed by the great Mead Lux Lewis. Tsing is the organiser of the International Boogie Woogie Festival in Switzerland, which celebrated its 10th birthday last weekend. I asked Tsing how a young boy from Lugano became a boogie-woogie ambassador.
It's a short question, but has a long history. Okay, the first time I hear boogie-woogie, I was a small, little guy. I don't remember, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, because my father, he plays himself like 20 instruments, and he had a lot of records at home. So I was listening to these records with these big black piano players on the cover. So I was very fascinating of that covers, and then I listened to this piano music, and I found it right away very happy and very... the rhythm is, you know, it's a moving rhythm, it's something moving for children, it's very attractive.
Boogie Woogie was developed from the blues in Texas at the beginning of the 20th century. It then spread to Chicago and from there to the rest of the world. I asked Tsing how he got the idea for an international Boogie Woogie festival in Lugano.
Principally also because I was invited to other festivals. So then the other piano players asked, what about if you organize a festival down in Lugano, where you live? And I was thinking, yeah, why not? Actually, we have a lot of festivals here, but no festival is dedicated to the blues piano and to the boogie-woogie piano. So I started in 2002 inviting four friends with a smaller hall, and we fill it up, and it was more and more successful. I'm very happy about this, that I could share this music with a lot of people.
Tsing is a natural entertainer, and stage presence is important in a style of music that can sound repetitive to untrained ears. I asked him what it is about Boogie Woogie that he loves so much.
Oh, I can't explain. It's my life, you know. I play it since I'm a child, and I just love to play it. I love every week I play somewhere else, and it's my style, and it's just the rhythm. I like the rhythm and this foot tapping, and that the most beautiful thing is to see the people happy. Like when I go to a classical, I love classical music, but sometimes they are like sleeping. And at my concerts, they don't sleep. They just hear there and they're laughing. And that's nice to see when the people go out from a concert and everybody has a smile on the face.
This view is backed up by Lorraine and Charles Lawrence, who had travelled from Britain for the festival, their first time in Switzerland.
Are you here because you love Boogie Woogie, or you're trying to get away from the royal wedding?
No, we weren't getting away from the wedding. We love Boogie Woogie, and my husband plays it.
I've loved Boogie practically all my life, and I've longed to hear people playing it, and I just didn't know about this.
What is it about Boogie that you love so much?
Just makes you want to get up and dance, and it fills you with joy. It makes you glad to be alive.
To play us out, the Sylvan Tsing Trio plays Dancing the Boogie, composed by Tsing, who claims that the more than 3 million hits on YouTube makes it the most successful boogie clip online.
That report by Thomas Stevens from the International Boogie Woogie Festival in Lugano ends our programme for today. Join us again next week for more news about Switzerland, or check out our website, swissinfo.ch. I'm Julia Slater.